Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
I just thought that it was so wrong. I think it's like the unpardonable sports sin to break up a dynasty before its time. I mean, a general manager and an owner, you got two jobs. Make the franchise money and win championships. Those are your goals. Both of those goals were being met during the Bulls dynasty. And I thought it was just shameful for it to be broken up prematurely because Jerry Krause wanted to build his own thing and wanted credit for building that team. Now, let me give him credit. He did a very good job. Right. Yes, he did. Discovering Scottie Pippen at an NAIA school and having the guts to draft him number five, you know, worked the trade with Seattle for Olden Polynes, but getting Scottie Pippen was a coup. All right. Tony Kukoc.
But Chris, the
discovering
bigger part,
him was good big.
I was gonna say
Horace Grant.
What you're saying
Bill
is
Cartwright.
The,
so he did a good job.
Right, the part of discovering, like you said, he wasn't playing at Duke or North Carolina, Scottie Pippen.
Right.
That's the general manager, right? That's somebody who's going out and has an eye for talent. You got to give him credit.
Well, and beyond that, Rob, I mean, that's enough, right? You're right, going into the weeds and discovering the Scottie Pippen. But also, you could have looked at him and been like, this is NAIA. You know what I mean? He can't do this at division. He wouldn't be doing this in the Big Ten. He wouldn't be doing this in the ACC. He wouldn't be doing this in the Big East. So it would have been easy to overlook that. So I give him credit for that. I give him credit. And again, he built a great team around Michael Jordan. So I don't take anything away from him in that regard. But I just think you, and I think this happens, Rob, with teams that win a lot, and there are only a few. There are only a few. We saw it with the New England Patriots. They were ready to move on from Tom Brady after Super Bowl win number five, right? We got Jimmy Garoppolo, and we're going with him now, and Brady wins him another Super Bowl. So I just don't know. It's a little different because Brady now is going to be 43, and all that. And you haven't won. You didn't win last year, even though you were good. You didn't win, so you can justify that. But I just think the lust to move on, that Belichick was ready. Brady got something left, but we ready to move on. I just think that's somewhat similar to what Krause did.
Well, I think that egos, this is the stuff where egos come in, Christian. You know this. This is what breaks up people in bands. Beatles,
good point.
Right? I mean, you know, what are you doing? Where are you going? John Lennon, hello, Yoko Ono, hello, is this on?
Right.
We're one of the best bands ever in the history of music.
LTD, Jeffrey Osborne and LTD. But seriously, I know what you're saying.
But
I know exactly
you know what I'm saying.
Commodores.
Lionel Richie and the Commodores.
Right.
Diana
Ross
and the Supremes.
No,
Chris.
Right.
You know what? One of the bands who never broke up, which still the Rolling Stones, which unbelievable.
No, right.
Because Mick Jagger was the front man.
The greatest band ever.
Right. They never broke up.
Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying? Egos get involved. Even though you're having success, everybody's making money. It happens. Because people go, you know, John Lennon's like, well, I wrote most of these songs. You know what I mean? I'm the brains behind this thing. And I'm maybe not getting the credit. I'm just talking. You know what I mean? I don't know all the details.
Yep.
And that's what happens. And then all of a sudden, you have this great thing, and it comes to an end. So we've seen that happen. We've seen that happen, Chris, on radio shows where guys have a lot of success. One guy doesn't like it.
Tell me something?
No, I'm just saying.
You getting a little big headed up in there?
No, we saw a big breakup in New York of a legendary radio show. Am I right or wrong?
Yes.
Making a lot of money. Yep. So all I'm saying is that stuff happens because of ego. And I'm with you. It made no sense for a general manager to tell Phil Jackson, terrible. That you could go 82-0 and we win the championship and you're not coming back under any circumstance.
Right.
How can you make that?
Rob, honestly, and again, Krause was great, very good, great at his job. That's darn near a fireable offense.
Right. How could you tell someone you could go 82-0, win a sixth championship, the third in a row, and we don't want you back?
Right.
It makes no sense.
What is that about? I'm sorry. And I get it. You're absolutely right about ego. But I think this is a little different. Obviously, it was ego with Krause. But you have to understand, as a general manager, even as an owner, you are not in the credit business. No, look, the credit's gonna go to Michael Jordan for the dunks and the mid-range jumpers, and Scottie Pippen for the defense and the assists, and Phil Jackson for bringing it all together as the coach. You might get a little bit, but you can't be measuring your success against what the players are getting. You can't be dying for the front page to scream accolades about you as the general manager. I'm sorry. If you get it, great. But if you get it, it's icing on the cake. And Krause didn't understand that, Rob.
It's never about the general manager. I'm sorry. It just isn't.
No,
and
you're right.
Even though it's a big part of putting teams together and all kinds of stuff, but it just isn't. It's always going to be about the players. They're the ones scoring the baskets. They're the ones making the big shots that people remember forever. Nobody jumps up and down and goes, "Oh, my God, Jerry Krause put this team together. I can't believe he won three championships in a row. Jerry Krause, my God." Wait a minute, which one is Jerry Krause? What number does he wear? Do you know what up? There's nothing.
Right.
But, you know, after a while, you learn who's running the operation. You learn that kind of stuff. You say, okay, I love the moves he makes, and you give him some credit. But you're never going to be out front. You're in the front office. You're unseen, unheard for the most part. Every so often, they interview you on TV, Chris, right?
Yep.
Every so often, the reporters talk to you and get some information and stuff. But that's not what they're writing about every day. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I you may disagree with me on that, this, Rob, but I got to be honest. Watching that, and you know, we've talked about it before, and I have felt, I like what LeBron has done by ushering in the era of player empowerment. And to me, what we watched last night just justified it. It justified it. Why a LeBron James will say, "I will not let the front office or ownership control my destiny." Who knows? Michael Jordan may have won one or two more championships. Who knows? And LeBron has said, "You won't control it. You will not control it."
So he
did the yearly deals. He went where he wanted to go. He talked with other players and built his own teams. And let's face it, LeBron had a major hand in building all his championship teams. He sat down with Wade and Bosh, and they decided, "We're going to team up in Miami." They won championships. He went to Cleveland, talked to Kyrie before, decided which guys he wanted to keep. Whether it helped them win the ring or not, he brought Kevin Love there for Andrew Wiggins. They won the championship. Now, we'll see what happens with the Lakers whenever they're playing again. But he is the reason Anthony Davis is with the Lakers. So I think a lot of people, we'll see what you think, but who have poo-pooed LeBron, who have been upset about his micromanaging as a player, and what it's led to with Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis. But I applaud these players for taking their destiny into their own hands precisely because of what we saw last night. Don't leave it to the front office.
I could not disagree with you more. LeBron acted out of selfishness. LeBron was fearful that he was going to wind up the chosen one without a championship and panicked. That's why he had to go to Miami and team up with this guy, with that guy, with those guys. It wasn't about player empowerment. It was, what's the easiest path for me to win a championship? That's what LeBron is about. Chris, you give him way too much credit. It wasn't thought out like that at all. Oh no, I'm not going to let some... No, it was like, how can I win easily? How can I destroy Stop the it. Eastern Conference?
How can I...
No,
easily?
Hold on. Let me get my points in. And the same reason, that's why other people didn't always follow him. Okay, if you want to say Anthony Davis did, but the perfect example was what Kawhi Leonard did. It was set up for him to come to L.A. and have an easy path. Hey, you could play with LeBron. You could play with Anthony Davis. You don't have to play all the games. You could win 3, 4, 5 more championships past Michael Jordan with that tandem together. And he still said no. Because that's not what it's about. It's about competition. It ain't just about the easiest path or making things easy for yourself. LeBron did it out of selfishness, and stop giving him credit that he was some soothsayer or talking about, I'm going to liberate players. This was about LeBron James and nobody else, and not too many other guys have really followed suit.
And
wait a minute.
Kawhi.
Wait a minute.
His way out of San Antonio.
But he also had an issue with the way that they dealt with him medically. So let's not poo-poo that. He wasn't happy with the way that they dealt with him and his injuries and how they didn't listen to him, Chris. And that's why he worked his way out of there. And the other part is when you talk about players in the league and Durant, the one thing...
Durant didn't follow LeBron.
But here's the other part. The one thing LeBron did, that supposedly was going to make it great for him, backfired and actually worked against him, creating an even more super team than he put together. And that's why he hasn't been able to win. And people can't say it ain't unfair. He tried to buck the system. And you know what he got? He got bucked by the Warriors. And that's why he hasn't won. And that's why he's lost more championships than any other regular season MVP in the history of the NBA. It actually backfired.
I agree with you that Durant one-upped him. But Durant did get... If LeBron doesn't build that team in Miami, I don't think it even enters Kevin Durant's mind to go play for the Warriors. And so but you're right. It was like you've said it, and you're right. LeBron built MySpace, and Durant created Facebook.
No doubt about it. Am I right?
There's no question. And that has come back to hurt him. But the fact of the matter is this. It empowered Durant to do what the heck he wanted to do. It empowered Durant to say, you know what? I do want to go to Golden State. I'm going to do it. It empowered Anthony Davis to say, I know I got a year and a half left on my deal, but guess what? I don't want to play here. And I'm not going to wait for the front office. I've given them 7 years to bring me better players. They haven't done it. And
Chris,
you're killing LeBron.
No.
LeBron played for 7 years in Cleveland. And look, I think personally, LeBron was good enough to lead that Cleveland team to a championship. And I think he shortchanged himself by leaving there. However, he didn't have a second star there, Rob. And he had to try to go through the big three of the Celtics. And he didn't have a... Kobe had Pau Gasol and other guys, and he wanted a second star. And he didn't see how he could get it in Cleveland. He was trying to get Bosh to come to Cleveland.
But
and
Chris,
Bosh was like, man, I'm going to Miami where it's warm to play with Wade.
But other guys in the NBA had forced their way out of situations, including Shaquille O'Neal when he wanted to leave Orlando.
Shaq just left. He didn't force his way out.
Just saying, there's plenty of players who have moved on and decided that they didn't want to be somewhere. So I get that. Even in the NFL with high draft picks who don't want to play in a particular town or city, LeBron didn't invent that. The only thing I'm saying is, and this is where we'll agree to disagree, I don't think it was some thought-out situation where he was Norma Ray of the NBA. It was more about being selfish, trying to win, and that's all he was looking at.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Our next guest is a special guest. In the 90s, he represented most of the superstars in the NBA, and 80s and 90s, Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, several others, and most notable, of course, Michael Jordan, NBA agent David Falk. David, welcome to the iCup.
What's up, David?
Good to be with you guys.
It's great to have you. Thanks for joining us. And let's just start with what we watched last night. You may have seen the entire Last Dance 10-part episode, but what were your thoughts on what we watched last night? And what do you think led Michael to, at this point, finally say, you know what, after 23 years or whatever it was, let's go ahead and put this out?
I'll answer the second question first. I think I just stopped bugging him so much that he finally just decided on his own. You know, as you know, as you get, it's like, you know, having great clients like Michael and Pat and Coach Thompson, you know, for 30, 40 years, it's like having children. You have to learn as they get older and they mature and they get more experience. You have to give them, you know, more independence in making their decisions. Michael's a highly intelligent man. He's a highly intelligent business guy. And David Stern pounded me for years, you know, to take this footage and put it to work. And I think when I finally stopped pounding him, you know, he you know, agreed it would be a good idea to do it. I thought it was an amazing insight into the man, you know. You know, people see him on the court in his uniform and they see him doing amazing dunks and, you know, great shots and great defense. But, you know, it's the first time the public can really understand the incredible competitive drive that he has, which is really, I think, what separates him from every other superstar in the league. I mean, there's a lot in his generation, Chris, there are way more superstars than there are today, probably five times more. You know, I think there are probably five or six today. There were probably 25, you know, in the 80s. Almost every great team had two. The Lakers had three, Magic, right. Kareem, and Worthy. Boston had Bird, McHale, and Parrish. You know, Utah had Stockton, Malone. Detroit had Isaiah, Dumars. You know, I mean, Seattle had Sean Kemp.
Payton. Yep. Right.
Payton. I mean, exactly. And today, you know, you scratch your head after you name the first four or five guys, like, who you'd really say is a superstar, not a star.
Right.
And so, you know, Michael, in his 30s, clearly understood that the clock was running down and he wasn't going to be playing it when he's 50 years old. And he just wanted to win. And I think the movie, the documentary shows the tremendous competitive drive he had when he was informed by the general manager that this is going to be the last run.
Sorry, David, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
go
you
ahead,
go.
Rob. All right, the part that jumped out to me, this is the thing that I constantly argue with people about these days and players, you know, wanting to form super teams and all that. The Bulls were god-awful before Michael Jordan got there, and he didn't win his first year. There were pain and being beaten down by the Pistons and the Celtics, you know, he got his lumps, but he never like decided, oh, well, I should go to New York and play with Patrick Ewing to try to win a champion. He wanted to do it on his own. I think that's what separates Michael Jordan when I see other stars of today, where everybody just wants an easier path or help. Do you look at it that way, that he was willing to stay with an organization that had no history of winning and do it itself and wind up winning multiple championships?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think now I go stronger than that. If you sat down and asked Michael Jordan the following question, at any time in your career, you know, including after the Dream Team in 92, do you ever think what it would be like to play with Bird and Magic? And he'd look at you like you had lost your mind and say, there is zero chance. I love those guys. I respect those guys. But I wanted to kick their butt every night on the court. You know, it was a friendly rivalry. And, you know, I think that level of ultra competition, I think Kobe had it. You know, there aren't a lot of players today. I'm not saying no one has it. There aren't a lot of players today that have that, incredible desire, you know, to just kill. If you want to understand it, there's a great book that a friend of mine named Michael Baerberger wrote called The Second Life of Tiger Woods. And Tiger's like that. Tiger didn't want to just beat you on Sunday. He wanted to annihilate you. And I think that's what makes the really all-time greats great, you know, is that they just have that DNA, the Terminator. They just want to destroy you.
NBA super agent David Falk joining the Odd Couple. David, there were reports that when Michael sat down with the interviewers for the documentary that he said, look, I'm a bit concerned at this being out there because people might think I'm a horrible person. And obviously, you know, that it may be an overstatement, but is that concern on Michael's part legitimate? And, you know, how different is he from, you know, the guy we saw in the Hanes commercials and the Mike, if I can be like Mike Gatorade and Space Jam, you know, always smiling and everybody loved. How different was he really from that guy?
No, that's exactly who he is when he's off the court. You know, he's a very low-key guy, extremely gregarious, respectful. He's fun to be with. But what the public really has difficulty understanding, Chris, is when a superstar puts on his uniform, he's working. Now, when I go to work, most people say I'm pretty intense. When I'm not working, I'm playing golf or hanging out with my boys. I hope I'm not the same person I am when I'm working. It doesn't mean I'm schizophrenic. It just means when I put my uniform on, I have a certain level of intensity. People said Patrick Ewing in New York for years was a thug. Patrick is the biggest teddy bear of all time. But when he puts that number 33 on and he goes to work, I mean, he's all business. And no one exemplified that more than Michael Jordan. And so on the court, you know, he was highly demanding, very giving, but highly demanding because he knew that he didn't have 10 more years to win the sixth championship. You know, they were going to break up the team. You know, there's a famous coach who used to coach both the Rams in L.A. and the Redskins here in Washington, George Allen. And he had a famous quote, "The future is now." And for Michael Jordan, when Krause told him that this is if Phil Jackson goes 82-0, he's not going to be back. And Michael told him, "That's great, but I'm not going to play for anybody else." The future was that now. You know, it was the last. The last hurrah, the last tango in Paris, the last dance, whatever you want to call it. And he was incredibly, you know, focused on winning that sixth championship.
Rob, what was it, just to follow up, what was it about Phil Jackson that Jordan was just so drawn to? Because obviously they were having some success, not championship yet, but maybe they would have gotten there under Doug Collins. What was it about Jackson that Jordan just fell in love with?
Well, first of all, I think Michael is incredibly respectful of all his coaches. You know, he played for Coach Dean Smith, one of the all-time great coaches in college basketball. Had a great deal of respect for Dean. He played for Kevin Locker. He respected Kevin. He played for Stan Albeck. Michael was taught by his parents and by Dean, you know, to have respect for the game and for your coaches. And so it wasn't that Phil was the first coach he respected. He respected all his coaches. And I think in today's, you know, probably in his generation, even today, if you think about it, if you're a coach and you don't have your superstar player totally in tune with your philosophy, he's got to implement what you do on the chalkboard, on the court. I'll tell you a great story as an example. You know, in the highlight of Showtime in the 80s, the Lakers traded for one of Michael's teammates who was in the dock named Orlando Orridge. He had come out of rehab. They thought they needed a fresh start. And O was a little bit lazy in practice. So Magic's watching the first couple of days. He's like sort of moping up and down the court. And he's doing a slow burn. But the third day, Magic throws him the hardest blind pass he can, splits his mouth open. Orlando gets about 8 stitches, comes out of the locker room with bandages, and Magic turns to him very nonchalant and says, "Hey, in case nobody told you, we run the fast break here in L.A." Now, Pat Riley didn't have to say it. When you have Magic or Bird or Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing, John Stockton, and that guy is implementing what the coach wants on the floor, that's why it works. When there's a disconnect between the coach and the star, it's hopeless. And so Michael respected all his coaches. Phil, as you know, has a very interesting psychological, you know, drive. But, you know, and what I find, you know, no one's talked about this. You know, I find it so amusing. Everybody, like, credits the triangle. Michael Jordan could have won six championships playing a freaking rhombus. You know, I mean, it wasn't the offense. It wasn't, as Krause said, the organization. He almost single-handedly, took those guys. He won with Pippen. He won when Pippen wasn't playing. He won when Pippen had headaches. You know, he's just – he was the ultimate competitor, the ultimate warrior.
The other part that I got something from was him wanting to get his dad's attention like his older brother. I thought that was some insight tell me about it. You brought up, being raised by his mom and dad, and obviously they seemed like they just did a really nice job with living in the country folk, just kind of respectful, nice people. But that part kind of gave me some insight of a young kid looking for his dad's admiration.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, you grow up, and if you're a good student, like your dad will say, oh, that's my genes. Or if you're a good, athlete, your mom will say, that's my genes. On both sides, James and Dolores Jordan are great people, extremely into self-development and growth. No matter what Michael did at any point in his career, even today, if you sat down with Dolores, she'd say, oh, he could do it better. He needs to keep growing and, not sit back. And so, he had a tremendous sense of competitiveness from his parents. As he explained, his brother Larry, we call him LDJ, he used to kick his butt on the court when they were very young, and they had fierce rivals on the backyard court in the dirt. He's very, very close to his two brothers, to Larry and Ronnie, and to his sister, his younger sister. But he was extremely competitive, and his parents constantly drove him in a very supportive way, not in a bad way, very loving, supportive way. But a lot of parents think that their kid is the be-all and end-all. And his parents weren't like that at all. They constantly wanted to see him improve and, behave as a gentleman and got his college degree. He went back to summer school and got his college degree, despite the fact that he came out as a junior. They were amazing people. I mean, I love, everyone knows the famous story. When Nike invited Michael to come to Beaverton, Oregon, to have a meeting about signing him, he didn't want to go. It was the very first thing I ever asked him. He didn't want to go. And it amuses me to death, Chris, when I hear, Sonny to Carousel, I signed Jordan. Oh, my friend George Raveling, who's the assistant coach on the Olympics, who I love to death. Those two guys couldn't even get him to come visit the school. And they're taking credit for making the deal. I called his parents and said, look, he doesn't have to sign with Nike, but this is like a campus visit. And he's got to go and see it and hear it and listen to it. They said, David, don't worry. He'll be on the plane. That's the way they were, very calmly. And they, I couldn't persuade him to get on the plane. His parents were first 3 or 4 years. Think about this, Chris. Most people don't understand this, but when you sign a player to represent him, he's putting his name on a piece of paper. You haven't done anything for him yet. He shouldn't trust you. You have to earn his trust. Right. And over the first 3 or 4 years of Michael's career, I would tell him that all the time. I want to earn your trust. I don't want you to just blindly trust me. I don't expect you to blindly trust me. I want to earn your respect by what I do on the court, just like he wanted to, earn his time as a rookie by what he did on the court. And his parents were the bridge. When I had issues or things that he wasn't certain about, we'd sit down and have a family meeting. His parents were incredibly involved in the first 3 or 4 years as we were building the foundation. And they're just great people.
David, great stuff.
Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, definitely. And be safe out there.
That's right. You and your family.
I appreciate it very much. Always good to be with you, Chris.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We call him the MDE. The most dominant ever, and it's been hard to get him on today, but we finally got him, the one and only Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq, what's up, man?
Speaking of the triangle, I have a doctorate in the triangle, as you already know.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, it is right.
Let me ask you that, Shaq, because obviously – go ahead.
You know what? I have a doctorate because I was the last one to beat the triangle. And then when I adopted the triangle, I knocked off three for myself. So, yeah, that's right. Tough guy.
Is that me? Is that aimed at me, Shaq?
Yes, it is.
Am I a tough guy? I didn't know that.
You saying okay. when you beat the triangle in Orlando?
Yes.
You mean now, when Michael Jordan came back?
Now, how much credence do you put into that? Because obviously that wasn't the real Michael Jordan.
You know, it's funny. Everybody says that, and that's their only comeback. But you know what I know. Step on the floor. Hey.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So, look.
Go ahead.
I win so much money in barbershops on that bet. But listen, the next year, Michael came back and made sure we didn't even win a game. So, you know, we had fun. You know, we had fun, you know, playing that. And look, we knew that Mike had took some time off and he was kind of rusty. But look, he's still the greatest player ever. And he stepped on the floor and we was able to, you know, get past him. And then we got swept by punk-ass Kenny Smith. So
I know he never let you live that down.
Hey, if Nick Anderson knocked down a couple free throws, that might have been different. I'm serious. If you would have won that first game, that would have changed a lot. And Nick Anderson was never the same.
Yeah, I know.
Real talk, Shaq. I remember watching that game and thinking y'all led most of the way. And I remember thinking y'all would have won that game and maybe the series if he had hit those free throws. Did you feel the same way?
I mean, I don't want to blame it on that.
Put it all on it, right.
Yeah, because, you know, I miss a ton of free throws that cost us a lot of games. But I felt that, you know, we shouldn't have been doubling Akeem. Because, listen, Akeem was going to get his, I was going to get mine. But, you know, when you play the great big man and you double him, it allows guys like Kenny to hit seven threes and Big Shot Bob. So I was telling Brian Hill, and I'm like, listen, he's going to get 20 and 30, but I'm going to get 25, 26. You know, right. But I'm going to score. It ain't like he's going to get 30 and I'm going to have four. You know, he's going to put pressure on me and I got to put pressure on him. But they was like, no, double, double, double. And then, you know, that, you know, allowed them to, you know, get back in the game.
No, that's real. Now, were you looking forward to this Last Dance documentary as much as most people? And did you learn anything from what you saw last night?
I didn't know that the beef between him and the organization was that tough. I didn't know that. You know, you always hear rumblings, but, you know, from the outside looking in, if you got the best player in the world, what's the problem? If your stadium is filled up every night, what's the problem? If your guy got the number one jersey ever, what's the problem? So, you know, you would hear a lot of stuff, but from the outside looking in, I was saying to myself that ain't true. But I never knew that Scottie Pippen signed that $18 million deal, which was when the time he came in, which was kind of like, you know, big money.
Right.
But you know, for him not to be able to get the money he deserved, I thought that was kind of crazy. But, you know, kudos to him. He still played his butt off and, you know, helped Mike win six. And I never heard Mike say, I couldn't have done it without Scotty. You know, that's like I always say, I couldn't have done it without Kobe. I couldn't have done it without D-Wade. But that's the first time I heard Mike say that.
Yeah. How about the idea, and you've had, you know, situations in the league, but with a general manager with such an ego, and, I mean, were you taken aback at – and you got to give Jerry Krause. He made some great trades. He found Scottie Pippen, you know, and he also got Bill Cartwright from the Knicks for Charles Oakley. He did his part. But the ego on him to tell a coach, you could go 82-0, win the championship, and you're not coming back next year no matter what. What did you make of that?
I mean, that's just how the business is. I played for five different teams. I got a lot of stories that will probably never be told unless I do a Shaq documentary. But listen, at the end of the day, it's just business. But it makes you ask the question, if you got the best team in the world, what's the deal? Why have an ego? I mean, if I was general manager, I would do what Bob is doing down there at Golden State with, you know, Steve Kerr. Whatever you want, Steve. That's why they're winning. No, everybody's happy. I don't understand it. But you know, ego can crumble a kingdom. You know, we've seen that throughout history. And you know, the good thing about this story that we're watching now, I've always said that you don't have to be on a bed of roses to win a championship. Like you guys jumped on me all year. Oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. Doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is if you play hard, you respect each other, and you do what you got to do to win. Like I never knew it was that much turmoil. Like I'm actually sitting there watching. Like I wasn't in the league at the time. Like I wasn't part of it at the time. First two episodes, I wasn't in the part. But I'm just saying, it's very, very interesting. And I've dealt with general managers with egos. It's probably why I ended up on five different teams.
Shaq, what were your personal interactions like with Jordan? Did y'all have much of a relationship?
Jordan helped me become more dominant. One time Jordan goes baseline. I clobber him. See, we're in the same, fraternity, Omega Psi Phi.
Right, right.
We always see each other. We always greet each other. But I cannot have Michael Jordan go baseline on me and throw it down. I can't walk in a barbershop. I can't talk to none of my relatives. I can't stop the NBA from putting it on the poster. So you already know me. I had to touch him up. So I touched him up, and he stayed on the ground. I wanted to help him up. And as I helped him up, he said, "Dog, don't ever help nobody up. Great foul." Mm. And he was always good to me. And I respect him. And, without him, there'd be no me. You know, without him, there'd be no Kobe. Because even though he didn't talk to us, he showed us how to win. Magic Johnson showed us how to win. Bird showed us how to win. So whenever you got great guys like that, you always try to take a little of what they can do. I saw that he was so dominant. I said, okay, let me put down the raps and the commercials and all that. Phil's coming in now. Let me run the triangle and let me do what he was doing. And I think that 2000 season, I kind of emulated that. When that idiot messed up my unanimous MVP vote, and I wanted to be the first guy to get a unanimous MVP, and dumbass Fred Hickman messed
up. Wow, it was Fred Hickman.
Yeah.
Fred was the one.
Hickman. Yeah, Fred Hickman in Atlanta messed up the damn vote. I got 99, and he gave Iverson one. But, like from watching Mike dominate, I said, okay, Phil would come in and say, this is what Mike did. This is what Mike did. Mike did this. Mike did that. So I was kind of emulating what Mike was doing. But I just wanted to be, like, very, very super dominant.
Hey, Shaq, I get the feeling that Michael will have even more fans after this is all over for, like, millennials and people who didn't see him play. And, yes, you could watch the games on YouTube, but I think this is going to give people a real insight into what made him tick, what kind of guy he was, how dominant he was, and how much he wanted to win. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, but let me add on that. I think the younger fans are gonna appreciate him more. Of course, they know about his shoes, but I could tell they don't know about his game when you talk about the best player in the game and people be, surpassing them. We're not going to have that conversation now. Like I'm talking to my kids and they're screaming out other names. I'm like, those are good guys, but bro, Mike. And it took a while for Mike to pass up Dr. J for me. You see what I'm saying?
Right,
Dr. J is that guy, but after being on the court and seeing Mike in real life, I'm like, Mike is that guy. Mike is that guy. But, yes, I agree with you. And, Steven Jackson said something that was very interesting today. He said, look, it ain't too many people in the championship match can say they undefeated. It's only right. Two, maybe Jordan, Mayweather, Rocky Marciano. And I never looked at it like that.
Joe Montana.
And Joe Montana. So, people always try to get me in those conversations. The crazy thing is the three people that they're talking about, I play with. So I don't want to – he's better than him, he's better than him. But for me, being there, being young, when Mike was doing this thing, I'm always have to go with Mike. But to be fair to everybody else, because everybody has a different answer, I think we should always just break it down to generations. You see what I'm saying? Rather than just say the greatest ever. But if you guys are asking the question, I got to say Mike is the greatest ever. And that's no disrespect to the other guys. I'm sure the other two, well, one's not here anymore, rest in peace. But I'm sure the other guy, if you ask him, I'm sure he'll say that, Mike inspired him. I mean, because I'm like watching some of his highlights. Nobody really got highlights like Mike got. See what I'm saying? No, anybody playing the dunk, but Mike was hanging in the air, triple clutching, shooting jump. Like it's, I got to go with Mike.
But Shaq, you think, I know you said last week, y'all, your best Lakers team, which was that the 2001?
Yeah.
Y'all would have beat, you think y'all would have beat the 96 Bulls would be the best Bulls team?
Yes.
Why you think y'all would have took them out?
Because it's two X factors. Because when they played people, they didn't double a lot. That they just scrambled and moved. They would have to double. Or they would probably go to the Hacker Shack, and the X factor is, if I can at least hit 65-70% and get that guys in foul trouble, they don't have a shot. Kobe gonna step up to the challenge, right?
Right.
Who else I got? Rick Fox and them and B. Shaw, they're gonna take turns on Scotty. But I'm wearing Bill Winnerton and Cartwright. I'm wearing that ass all the time.
They all would have had six fouls.
That's true. Now, speaking of championships, Chris never gives the 2004 Pistons any credit. I covered that finals.
No, stop it.
No, I want to.
I just say they never.
Hold on. I'm asking Shaq, not you. Chris doesn't give him any credit. I say they beat you guys in a five-game sweep. I covered the series. I worked in Detroit for a long time. But did you guys lose that series, or did the Pistons beat you in 2004?
I think we lost that series.
Thank you, Shaq, for
being
honest.
Shaq, what are you talking about?
Thank you for being honest.
How dare you say that?
We were not. They were together. They had all cylinders clicking. We were not together. You put two great teams us together, and I'm on one of those teams, I'm going to win all the time. You know that. We were not together. You already know what was going on. Same thing that's going on in this documentary now, same thing was going on with me. It was told to me that if we don't win the series, I'm out of there.
It was told to you
before the series started?
Yes, from somebody upstairs in the office. Hey, if you don't win this series, they're looking to make changes. So I knew once we didn't know it was time for me to do something else.
Wow. That's shocking, but it still didn't stop the Pistons from making shots, playing defense.
He wrote Detroit.
No, I'm just telling you.
He's a homer.
That ain't no homer. That was one of the all-time great teams put together with no stars, Shaq.
Well, first of all, Chauncey Billup and Rasheed Wallace, they are stars. Cut it out.
But they aren't on the Shaq and Kobe and Karl Malone, Gary Payton level, are they?
They are now. After they beat us, yeah. And you got Big Ben Wallace holding it down.
I'm not saying they were scrubs, but they weren't as talented as you guys were.
You're probably correct with that, but they had more cohesiveness than we did at the time. And then you had Carl in and out. Rasheed was having his way with Slava Mebendingo, and we were doing stuff we never had to do, like double and all that crazy stuff. And
my last question is, and you mentioned Ben Wallace, a guy that was kind of similar to him, Dennis Rodman. What was it like? I got to imagine it was just aggravating probably playing against him.
It was aggravating because they let him get away with a lot. So, of course, he was undersized. He was pretty strong, but when he used all his strength, for a guy like me, he used all his strength, right? And he would move me a little bit. I don't want to move, so I would just turn mine up 15%. He'd go flopping all over the place, crazy, fans go crazy. And he got to the point where he was actually really good at this. He irritated you so much, it made you forget about basketball and just go straight to fighting. Me and him got into a few, pushing matches. But what I learned about him, especially when he came to play for LA Lakers, nobody works harder than him. This guy used to come in, late for the pregame meeting, get you 20 rebounds, didn't take a shower, go to the club and party and have fun all night, and then come back into practice in the game and, you know, just do it all over next day. Another thing I like.
That's the great Shaquille O'Neal, man. Shaq,
we appreciate you.
Yes, definitely, man. We appreciate the time.
All right.